You're listening to China Africa Talk.
Jambo, ni Bridget akikuletea kipindi kinachohusiana na China na Afrika.
Vous écoutez le dialogue sino-africain avec Bridget.
Everything China, everything Africa.
Olá, você está ouvindo China Africa Talk com Bridget.
سيدتي وسادتي مرحبا بكم في الحوار الصيني العربي مع بريتشيت.
Welcome back to the program. You're listening to China Africa Talk. I'm your host, Bridget Mutambirwa, and I bring you discussions on what's happening with China and Africa from a Chinese and African perspective. The Nation Forum on World Civilization is a premier platform for global dialogue, founded in 2010 to foster cultural exchange and mutual understanding between civilizations. Hosted annually in Shufu, Shandong, the birthplace of the great philosopher Confucius, the forum serves as a bridge for discussing key global issues such as culture, modernization, and global governance. This year, the 11th Nation Forum will explore the theme Beauty in Diversity, Nurturing Understanding Among Civilizations for Global Modernization. It is particularly relevant today as the world faces increasing geopolitical fragmentation. How can civilizations with vastly different traditions and histories cooperate and work toward a common global vision? To discuss this further, I'm joined by Xiang Shicheng, Professor of Philosophy at Shidian University, and Edwin Etiebu, Professor of Philosophy at University of Witwatersrand, South Africa. Professors, welcome to the program.
So happy to be here.
Thank you very much.
Last time we had a discussion, it was around this time when we were approaching the Nation Forum. And here we are again discussing the Nation Forum from a broader angle. But for now, Professor Xiang, let's begin with you. Could you tell us what Nation means and under what context was the forum established and why is it significant in today's global context?
Thank you, Bridget. So the Nishan Forum is an international academic and cultural exchange event, which is held in Nishan, and that's in the Shandong province of China. It focuses on promoting dialogue among different civilizations, particularly on Confucian thought, traditional Chinese culture, and global ethical values. The term Nishan refers to the Nishan Mountain. So okay. Shan literally means mountain in China.
Okay.
In Chinese. And it's a culturally significant site in Shufu in Shandong province, which is the birthplace of Confucius.
Right.
According to tradition, Confucius' parents prayed at the Nishan Mountain before his birth. So at a time when geopolitical tensions and cultural divides are widening, on which we can base shared human values.
Over to you, Professor Etiebo. As mentioned, the forum is closely linked to the great Chinese philosopher Confucius. What are some of your personal takeaways from Confucianism and how do you see its values resonating in the modern world, including Africa?
Thank you, Bridget. That's a very thought-provoking question. There are a lot of takeaways, but let me focus on one important one. Mm-hmm. Among other things, Confucianism places a high premium on harmony or harmonious relationships, mm-hmm. the pursuit of which is respect for everyone and cultures, and which accordingly promotes peace in different degrees. And this value resonates in the modern world, not just in Africa. So let us start with Africa. Last year, it was estimated that there were about 28 state-based conflicts across the continent, mm-hmm. involving about 16 different countries of the 54 countries in Africa. That's a huge number of conflicts we did last year. Thus, clearly, Africans can learn from the admonition of Confucianism to imbibe the value of harmonious relationships and peace. Mm-hmm. Africa does have the intellectual and philosophical resources to engage with matters of conflict and peace, as embedded in, for example, the notion of Ubuntu, which pushes the value of humanity, togetherness, and working in unity. The truth is that those who are involved in these conflicts or promoting them seem to have developed some amnesia regarding these important values of harmonious relationship. But it's great to know that the values we see in Confucianism regarding harmony and peace are similarly shared in the African philosophical tradition, and that there's a lot of exchange that can take place between both civilizations and cultures. And concerning Confucian value to the world, the less said here, the better it is, given the current state of fragmentation confrontation, mm-hmm. chaos, and conflicts in the world. Need one be reminded of the recent bombing of Iran by Israel and the United States of America, or the constant bombing by Israel in Gaza and the humanitarian disaster currently going on there? We can go on and on and on about the chaos, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so we're in a time where the importance of a conviction value of harmonious relationship, promoting peace, being respectful of humanity and all of that becomes more paramount. I wish more people can actually see the importance of pivoting to learning from how we can become very better persons in the world through confession, value of peace and harmony.
Professor Chiang, this year's theme is Beauty in Diversity, Nurturing Understanding Among Civilizations for Global Modernization. What could have prompted the choice of this theme, and how does it reflect today's global challenges or opportunities? What's your take?
Yeah, so I very much agree with what Professor Teyabo was just saying. There's so much conflict, mm-hmm. and it takes a lot of will to get beyond that kind of more base desires. I think that what prompted this theme in the forum this year, mm-hmm. apart from just the more very explicit contemporary events, is a kind of a broader kind of ideal, which I want to express through the words of the Martinique thinker Aimé Césaire, who very famously once said, he wrote that, "For it is not true that the work of man is finished, that we have nothing more to do in the world, mm-hmm. that we are just parasites in this world, mm-hmm. that it is enough for us to walk in step with the world. For the work of man is only just beginning, and it remains to conquer all the violence you entrench in the recess of his passion. And no race holds a monopoly of beauty, of intelligence, of strength, and there is a place for all at the rendezvous of victory." Right. So all the kind of conflicts that happen do not align with that statement that Aimé Césaire wrote. And it's really an ideal that we need to sort of strive towards, but it takes a lot of effort to do that. And I think that the Nishan Forum is really a part of that kind of effort. The Nishan Forum operates, and then the theme this year in particular, operates on the view that there is indeed a place for all at the rendezvous of victory. Mm-hmm. But to get there, we require much effort and a lot of what I would call humanitarian will. Conflict is the antithesis of that kind of humanitarian will. Mm-hmm. And as Césaire also says, this work is only just beginning, and we're still in that process of working towards that ultimate victory.
That is indeed a beautiful quotation there by Aimé Césaire. Thank you for bringing that up there. I remember reading some books on Aimé Césaire. You sort of like took me back to my days in college as well. Thank you for sharing that. Professor Etiebo, what does this theme bring to your mind, and how do you think it applies specifically in the context of Africa and the broader global dialogue?
Look, Professor beautifully captured the essence of the theme and the rationale for it being chosen for this year's Nishan Forum. And I think, of course, given where we are in the modern world, our current state of affairs, it's quite very important. The first part of the theme is beauty in diversity. I like that phrase, mm-hmm. you know, and people tend to want to ignore the importance of diversity. And I think the forum is trying to bring us back to that core idea of we are better off when there's diversity than when some people think that there's only one way of doing things. And this brings to mind the importance of course, broader global dialogue or cross-cultural dialogue on the one hand, and respectful engagement with different civilizations and cultures on the other hand. Mm-hmm. The notion of beauty and diversity with specific regard to civilizations or cultures is to emphasize, in my mind, on the one hand, the importance of not looking down upon any civilization or culture, and on the other hand, of placing treating all civilizations and placing them on equal moral pedestal. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way you can enjoy the diversity, if you don't get into this idea of thinking of a mono civilization, a one world civilization. Mm-hmm. Now, such value and attitude are one that seem to fly in the face of hegemonic attitude from the West.
Right.
And when we recognize this beauty in diversity, I think we foster the flourishing of all civilizations and cultures. And as we do so, we at the same time make room for places like Africa, other places to also showcase their contributions to world civilizations. Mm-hmm. And as this moves along a broader global dialogue, we effectively end up decentering the triumphant narrative of the West that sees itself as a superior civilization or culture. So the Nishan Forum helps us to appreciate if there's beauty in diversity, There's no one culture or civilization that is superior to other. And that means, of course, we have to dissenter the sort of hegemonic or triumphant narrative we find from the West that tend to see itself as a superior civilization or culture, which, of course, is kind of funny because the Western civilization is younger than a lot of other civilizations, the Chinese, for example, the Indian, the Egyptians, and many other ones. But yet, the Western civilizations tend to present itself as superior to these other civilizations and cultures.
Okay, look, I was trying to break this up, this theme. Beauty and diversity, I think I've understood. Nurturing understanding among civilizations, I've understood that. But the part for global modernization, what exactly are we talking about?
If I just chime in relation to what Professor Etiova was just saying, and in relation to your question about modernization, very important thing to understand is the idea that there is no end of history. The idea of traditionally, there's a, you know, the very famous political scientist in the United States called Francis Fukuyama proclaimed that there is a particular form of human organization that is the end of history. And therefore, if you accept that somebody found the end of civilization, and then that flies in the face of somebody like Aimé Césaire would say that the work of man is only just beginning.
Yeah.
And in some ways, the work of man is a process that is forever. You know, that the human world, the civilized world is forever in the making. There is no end point and nobody has the sort of the final answer. You know, you find some kind of formula that just resolves all things forever, which is why we then need to have dialogue. We need to keep talking to each other, keep working with each other. And then that relates to this issue of the modernization, because this idea of modernization is just another way of talking about this idea of once you've reached modernity, you're then modernity. And then there is, in some ways, only one form of modernity, which is then just spread to everybody else. But if you think about the idea that we have to constantly work together to make and remake and constantly build our world, then there is no some kind of endpoint, which is, in my understanding, what they mean when they say global modernization, that it's a very plural thing that requires kind of teamwork and dialogue together.
Just to chip in, if I may. So that's I think Professor captured it very perfectly. So people talk about modernity, of course, as the end of history, like Fukuyama said, the end of history. But then of course, then people say, well, so what happens after modernity? Oh, post-modernity or transhumanism, right? You know, as if transhumanity or post-modernity is not part of humanity, right? You
know,
we may need to understand modernity in a very different way from how some historical people understand it, to think that it's the end of history. Rather, it's part of the process of humans who may become different kind of humans, but we still be humans, and history continues and continues and continues. So part of the whole idea of having it as part of a team here is to say, well, given our current status quo, where we are in the world, what people might call modernity in inverted commas, how do we, of course, begin to get different civilizations and cultures to work together so we can tackle some of the problems that are peculiar to this period of time? So I don't think the use of modernity in this thing is meant to support the idea of people who think there is history is just in one direction and we are at the end of history and all of that. Yeah.
European modernity, Western modernity was so much indebted to the ability to draw on the resources of the rest of the world, intellectual and material and otherwise, and during the age of globalization. So whatever it is you think that is modernity, those were made available by the fact that it was connected, you know, from a medieval period. Medieval period, it was rightly called a kind of dark ages. It was dark because it wasn't connected. And went through colonialism, which was a very, very violent form of connection, but it was still connected nonetheless to the rest of the world. That was what enabled then that period that is called modernity. So the very idea that modernity is this kind of unilinear thing, this kind of Hegelian idea of spirit traveling from the primitive East to the West and then reaching kind of modernity, that was always a kind of mythic narrative. And then I think that narrative is still with us, but we have to recognize that historically that was never real.
I'm going to be looking out for, during the forum, how they're going to interpret this whole aspect of for global modernization. So let's move on. The Nishan Forum covers a wide range of topics. Which one has resonated with you the most, and how do such discussions help advance global cultural exchange, mutual respect, and promotion of peace?
So I think that all of these terms that they describe, they're all aspects of the same thing. It's like a matrix of the same things, because I think from the Chinese view, the harmony or this ability to embrace diversity, by embracing diversity, I mean, you really sort of learn from diversity and then integrate it into yourself. That precisely is civilization. So when they talk about these different themes, I just think of it as different perspectives on the same issue that they're always talking about. Again, it's very similar to what Aimé Césaire was saying, that kind of sentiment. You know, he might not use the same kind of language, but I think the sentiment is still the same. There's the ability to sort of creatively bring the work of man together. In that sense, all of these themes, I think, are very similar. And then again, it's all of these different concepts who are stressing this idea that civilization isn't a given and it's not static, but it's a creative work in progress. And then we should understand this kind of work in progress is an ability to overcome our kind of more baser instinct. It requires a lot of effort, which is why forums like these exist, but then we should work towards creating complementarity. So that's how I see the meaning of those themes as.
Let's talk about the Chinese civilization, the core values of Chinese civilization. What would you describe as the core values of Chinese civilization, such as harmony, respect, and benevolence? And how are these shaping China's approach to global engagement, especially in an era of geopolitical uncertainty?
There's actually a very famous line that I like from the Analects, in which Confucius says, when he's walking in the company of two others, I'm bound to learn from them. The good points of the one I copy, the bad points of the other I correct in myself. So I think this kind of attitude informs personal conduct, but I also think informs the way that China, even today, relates to other countries, other states. In that statement from Confucius, his point is that when I'm with different people, with different perspectives, there is always something I can learn. So, you know, the person who's doing something good, I will copy them. I will try to self-reflect and make and copy their good conduct. And then the person who's doing bad conduct, I see that too. I also make a moral judgment. I have capacity to make moral judgment. I don't like what you're doing. But then that then is an opportunity for me to reflect on myself and to make sure that I'm not doing the same kind of bad behaviors that that person is doing. And then you can take that on a kind of global civilizational scale. That's why there's always something to be learned from other people. I think what is very interesting is that there is an attitude that, okay, the person who's doing something bad, I don't necessarily go and make them change it. I don't very coercively, violently sort of reprimand them or morally indict them, you know, because I think the idea is that, you know, if you go around doing that, that's going to create a lot of resentment.
Problems.
And
yeah.
So even if you want to improve people, that's not the best way towards doing that. So the best way towards ameliorating the collective of humanity is then to just lead by example. And then the very optimistic belief in human nature is that all humans have this capacity to see good behavior and then we'll be inspired by it. And then that's really the long-term way that you can actually improve human relations and improve other people. And I think that in China's international relations conduct today, I think you can very much still see that kind of attitude in play.
Professor Etiebu, Professor Xiang just reflected on some of the core values of Chinese civilization. Can you share some values that China and Africa may have in common and how these shared principles contribute to peace building and resolving global tensions?
I want to focus on one that which is not usually seen as a prominent value, which I think is a common value between Africa and China. This is the value of family, and which happens to be one of the subtopics of the forum. The subtopic of the forum is the meaning of family and social development in a civilizational perspective. Family is important for Africa.
We all related.
Yes, exactly. And that's why you find that in many indigenous African languages, you don't have terms for strangers. You don't. Nobody's a stranger. Rather, you are always part of us in some sense. So family is important for Africa as it is for China. But when we talk about family, we are not just talking about family at the superficial level or at the nuclear family level of just, you know, my family is me, the man or the woman in the relationship and the children. That's all. That's all there's family. Rather, we're talking about the extended and right to the point where you can talk about we are related, you know, with others who may not be biologically in a very strict sense of biology. All right. Yeah. For me, this sense of family that both Africa and China share have implications for how institutions are built. It's not just a conceptual notion of family. They have so much implication on how institutions are built, on how we relate to everyone in society and how we think of others and all of that. I'll give one example. So think about how in Africa, which I think also is in China, how the older members of family are cared for. For example, your aged parents or grandparents. Rather, they live as part of the children and grandchildren. So when the parents are getting older, you know, we take care of them at home. That's how it is in Africa, because that's the value of family. And so when the older ones are home, the younger ones benefit from the grandparents, from their experience, from their wisdom. And then the younger ones also confer benefits on their aged parents and grandparents with their energy and their creativity. So there's kind of a mutual benefit going on, and the family is kept together in that sense. And why is that important? It's important because, first of all, then the way institutions are organized will be different as it is from the West, for example, that have a different way of thinking about family. That's number one. Number two, and we know that the family is the basic unit of society. If you have a strong family like you have in China, because the family is, you know, it's not just the nuclear, but the extended, like in Africa, what that means is that you have certain kinds of values that reverberate across people and members of this family, right? It's very core, important values. So you are more likely going to get less people who are like, want to destroy the world, angry. For example, how many times do you hear of suicide bomber, terrorists who want to kill people, shoot people in the mall all over the place in China or in Africa? How many times do you get that? You hear that in the news. Versus in the West, we hear that on a daily occurrence. Partly because you have this really attempt family, to really give effort to the family values and where we are all part of continuous chain of how long family line can be drawn. And so it has implications for how society is designed, it has implications for peace building because, you know, you then, of course, have a view of family that
conscience.
Promotes
you get
togetherness. Exactly. And so these are important values. And the reason I'm talking about it, like I said, is because people don't talk about this enough. They talk about our values that we know, harmony, peace, relationship. But the family value that you have in China and Africa is one area that I think both share commonality. And that is very important for building societies, important for building a global world that thrives on peace and harmony.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Delvi, do you have any favorite sayings from the analytics of Confucius that you'd like to share with our audience? And how does it reflect on this year's theme or connect with contemporary efforts to bridge civilizations and promote global modernizations?
One of the sayings that I like relates to the concept of the rectification of names, which applies to everyone in society, but foremost to the rulers in society. So the saying goes like this: good government consists in the ruler being a ruler, the minister being a minister, the father being a father, and the son being a son. And as we learned, this saying was Confucius' reply to the ruler of the large state of Qi, who asked about the principles of good government. So the idea being that when rulers or government officials raise their behavior to reflect the way that they identify and describe themselves with them, there would be peace and order. And I believe that this reflects this year's theme, or specifically connects with contemporary efforts to promote global modernization, because we have the subtopic that talks about the beauty of maturity in the global modernization process. So it's really important that those who preside over human affairs at the global level really ought to display maturity, as the sub-team emphasized. But in displaying maturity, they need to question themselves. Are they really worthy of the positions they occupy? Or are they driven by personal gains, honor, or aggrandizement? So within the global sphere, what that would mean is that those who are in charge of global human affairs, to be qualified, they have to be worthy. And there are many people we know who are not worthy, right? You know, so Confucius, who would actually like literally roll in his grave, you know, for having people who take on positions and responsibilities for which they are unworthy.
I really liked what Professor Adeyabo was saying about the rectification of names, because it's in some ways it's antithetical to the what we have today, which is might is right. The rectification of names. Just because you have that role and you have the power to do something doesn't necessarily mean you earn it. You know, it's necessarily fitting with the status that you have. The kind of dominant idea we have today is might is right. That's why it relates to maturity. That might is right attitude is immature. It's very immature.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And how about from you there, Professor Xiang? What are some analytics of Confucius that you'd like to share with our audience? And, you know, how does it connect maybe with this year's theme of the Nishan Forum?
Okay, so there's another one that I like. Well, actually relates to what Professor Diabo was saying. Mm-hmm. The person who rules by virtue is like becomes like a North Polar star, mm-hmm. and the myriad lesser stars just circle around him. But yeah, so you know. So the idea is, and then what they mean by virtue is more kind of power that is a result of co-empowerment. Mm. So you can build relations with other people and then work with other people and then kind of build power together. And then that kind of empowerment then obviously makes other people like you, you know, and then they want to be around you because then you're going to build stuff together. And so his point is that everybody should strive after what he called virtuous government, as opposed to a kind of hegemonic coercive government, which obviously is powerful and then they can get stuff done. But that kind of power isn't non-coercive. Nobody's going to just spontaneously kind of come around you. Maybe they will as a kind of way, they're scared of you, but it's not kind of out of any genuine kind of instinct.
Just to wind up our discussion, in a world facing rising polarization and fragmentation, what role do you believe platforms like the Nishan Forum can play in restoring trust, fostering understanding, and building common ground between civilizations?
Look, I wish we have more platforms like the Nishan Forum. This is the only forum I'm aware of that sort of makes this very great positive attempt to bring together civilizations and cultures, you know, like a dialogue. Let us talk. We have so much in common that we have that separates us. And, and that is a good start.
Yes.
That's a good start.
Yes.
So the forum should be commended for that. And if we have more forums like that and these events are taking place all over the world, all over the time, then we are creating an atmosphere, a world where we are kind of changing our attitude, our thinking, our cultures, about dialogue, the importance coming together and all of that. So that's one great thing that we must, of course, commend it for. And so that for me, it's also helped to build trust, because what it does is that the forum is not set in such a way that it brings together civilizations or cultures to fight one another.
Right.
It's not. It enables the various civilizations and cultures to sort of be able to see where there are similarity to dialogue with one another. So in that first place, it's only a measure of trust. It doesn't have any agenda beyond just getting these groups to really be part of a global community of civilization. So that's for me is important. Maybe the forum and find way to see how some of these discussions that take place can move beyond just what you might call talk shops. Right? You know, how would these sort of ideas and discussions become powerful part of our global lives?
Yeah.
So how would they, in what ways can they feed into institutions, social values, into our education systems globally?
Professor Xian?
Obviously, I think Nishan Forum plays like a very important role, and we need more kind of platforms like this, because to build civilization requires that kind of trust. You need to constantly be doing that, which is why I think Professor Etiobo was saying that be good, we can just do that more and more, and then we kind of instill that kind of attitude into people's more. I think of it as like this: what is the opposite of civilization? Just kind of barbarism, and then it's like in a stream, and there's always this kind of water rushing, and we just have to keep constantly pushing against a force that is driving the other way, which there is, because there's a, like Amy Césaire said, it takes a lot to overcome those kind of violent passions, because there's a huge amount of, when you say capitalist interest in doing that, a lot of people will make money from that kind of passion, which is why we do need to build a huge amount of momentum against this. Also, obviously, this is, I think, a part of what the Nishan Forum does. It's a part of that very desire to build momentum against those other kinds of urges, and then we just need to be doing more of it. And then I think, like what Professor Etiabe said, you know, that we can do in on a different scales and different forms as well, but taking the same kind of sentiment and just making it bigger and bigger so that we have build a stronger momentum against that.
Well, that brings us to the end of this discussion. And Professor Xi, I look forward to having you in on another discussion. Wonderful insights. And I'll keep note of those analytics of Confucius that you shared there.
Thank you very much, Bridget, for having us. This has been fun and very stimulating discussion.
Thank you so much, Professor Chiabra. And thank you so much, Bridget, for hosting us once again.
Listeners, you can subscribe to our online newsletter on CGTN or Substack to get more insights on China-Africa relations. Just search China-Africa Talk.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others. Post it on social media or leave a rating and review. Thanks again. See you next time.